This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. In January, Northern Kentucky University President Ashish Vadia showed a film at the school's convocation. Unlikely explores the challenges faced by students whom administrators believe would or would not have success in college. Though the film looks specifically at Columbia University and its Ivy League pedigree, local students applying to local schools may face similar difficulties. Can that be fixed? Joining Cincinnati Edition today are Northern Kentucky University Vice Provost Dr. Andy Durajaye. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Xavier University's Director of TRIO Student Support Services, Dr. Daniel McSpadden. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Navigo President Tim Hanner. His organization is part of Covington-based Children, Inc. He's also the former superintendent of Kenton County Schools. Welcome, Tim.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So we decided to have this segment prompted by the showing of a film at NKU's convocation back in January. It was called Unlikely in Pursuit of a Better You. The film showcases five individuals, quote, hurt by America's higher education system, and then they fight for a second chance and opportunity at five different cities across the United States. Some of the issues that those students in the film face include dropping out, other systemic barriers, and finding a living wage career afterwards. In your minds, what type of student or prospective student faces the most difficulties in succeeding in college? We'll start with you, Dr. Durajaye.
Well, I think the students that probably face the most difficulties are our first-generation students. You know, you think of any institution that we have here in the country and internationally, experience matters. And so if you're a first-generation college student, you don't have anyone who has any experience, you know, in your family, in your local network, I think that can have a definite impact on your ability to navigate higher education and ultimately graduate. So, you know, I think there's a lot of different demographics that are impacted by different things we do, but I think first-generation students are probably that group that has the most barriers.
I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk about first-generation students in particular because a 2016 article in the Washington Post also highlighted some of those issues that they face. I'll read a part of it. Quote, students whose parents didn't go to college face several unique challenges. They're less likely to have had access to the type of challenging high school classes that increase the chance of success in college and less likely to have confidence in their academic abilities. There's also the culture of college, which many students don't realize is different from high school. Take office hours, for instance, which could be a resource for a struggling student. But it goes on to say that these students associate going into an office with being disciplined, with doing something wrong. Is that something, Dr. McSpadden, that you believe to be true as well?
I would agree with that. A lot of students, they have that fear of having that one-on-one conversation with their professor. And we actually encourage our students to engage more with faculty on campus and to go to their office hours because it's more beneficial and advantageous of them to do so as far as understanding the syllabus, understanding what's going to be required, and getting that additional one-on-one assistance that they may need with their courses. So we do, as far as our TRIO students and students that participate in our program and services, we encourage them to meet with faculty and break that barrier. We also have functions where we invite faculty over so that they're on an even playing field to have those conversations and to sort of network with one another and get to know each other. But I think that it can be a barrier, but we do encourage and strongly encourage our students to take advantage of that.
And Tim, your organization works with secondary students, and that's where these post-secondary students are prepared. What do you see among those students who are probably the first in their family to head off to college?
Part of what we're talking about is why Navigo came about. And the idea for Navigo came from high school students, many of which, while they're in high school and after they graduated, came back and had the discussions with us. What we see, especially with the topic of first-generation college students, is many of them, quite frankly, Michael, don't even make it to day one. That there's a summer melt phenomenon, and it's students who academically are prepared to go to school. They fill out the FAFSA. They're ready to go, especially in urban areas and rural disadvantaged. You get as many sometimes as 70 to 75% of those students not making it to the end of the first year, but even making it to day one. Schools are working hard to engage students, get them ready for what comes next. But when that tether is cut, and over the summer between high school and college, getting a job, barriers sometimes in the community, fear setting in, can't find a Social Security card, you name it, we're finding there's a big disconnect. between what's happening in high school and getting them even to day one of college.
So I'm wondering what impact the current conversation or a current conversation about college is having on people's success or whether they're even interested in college anymore. There's really a question of, is it worth it? Mm-hmm. Not just from an experience standpoint or what opportunities may be available after, but is it literally worth it from a financial standpoint? There is a student loan debt crisis in this country. So with that in mind, really just from a financial standpoint, is college worth it?
I'll go first just based on, and then we can work towards. We're finding in our country, we now have college debt higher than mortgage debt. And as of last year, the price of college was rising 8 times faster than wages were rising. So what it has caused are families, schools, higher education to engage differently to make sure that students coming through high school, and part of what we do, are making the right decisions, that they've had experiences engaging with higher education, 2-year, 4-year workforce, more while in high school, so they're making better informed decisions when they graduate. I think what we could all agree on is that post-secondary training beyond high school is critical today for living wage and for careers, but not all students need to go into 4-year programs. And we have many, many students, and again, the data shows that we have less than 35% of the students graduating college within 4 years coming out of the majority of our schools in Kentucky. So it is causing folks to take another look at what are the best options for students coming out of high school.
Well, you're joined today by a couple of representatives from four-year schools. So let me ask Dr. Durajaye and Dr. McSpadden from Xavier, Dr. Durajaye from NKU, of course. Do you find that there are students on your campus who may have been better off at a 2-year school?
On our campus, I would say no generally. I generally believe if we've admitted them to NKU, we can work with them to make sure they can be successful. You know, to echo what Tim said, the question about is college at this point worth it? I think that no matter how you slice the data, we still have evidence that shows individuals with a 4-year degree are more likely to earn more money over the course of their lifetime. And sure. So I would say that that's a clear indication that college is worth it. Now, agree, echoing what Tim said, I think we've also got to think about, what do we mean when we say college? Are we talking about a 4-year degree? Are we talking about a 2-year degree? Are we talking about some sort of credential that gives you an opportunity to go into the workforce with a specialized training? I think college has to be different, and we've got to revamp what we think about when we say college achievement and getting that ultimate piece of paper, you know, however you want to describe it. And so I think that's got to be the crux of what we're doing. But I will say that I still think there is a strong value. I'm, you know, often missed in the conversation. We talk about preparing students for careers and going out into the workforce. But another piece is the development you get from college. You know, being an informed citizen, being able to really participate in democracy and the things that are very, very important right now. So I think there's a host of values that we have in higher education. I think those values are still there. But I do think we have to make sure that we work on some of the areas that are challenging. You know, we talk about 4-year graduation rates. We talk about 6-year graduation rates. You'll hear us talk a lot about persistence and retention. And so those are challenges. And so I wouldn't make an excuse that we've got to do better in those areas. But I think ultimately there's still a great amount of value in higher education and higher education attainment.
And Dr. McSpadden, I want to let you weigh in on that as well.
I agree with both of the panelists. I mean, I feel that college is still worth it. There's a value there. I believe that students that are on our college campuses, we have to make sure that we're helping them to find their niche, find what it is that they want to be and what they want to get out of their college experience. I mean, most students, of course, all students want to be successful, but how do you measure your success? And how is, you know, as that individual, how do they view success? And I think that we have to help cultivate that, help them to understand and navigate through the college process, especially our first generation college students, making sure that they understand how to navigate through the process, how to find that major that's a good fit for them. But then also talking about affordability, making sure that they can afford to be there and that the college campus that they are enrolled in is the exact place where they need to be and where they can afford to be there. So affordability comes into play, making sure that they can find their niche and doing things from the faculty and staff and administrator end to make sure that we retain those students and that they persist at our university. So the value is there. I think that we have to put those mechanisms in place to make sure that students understand that, see that value, and want to be there and to obtain that college degree.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking today with Northern Kentucky University Vice Provost Dr. Andy Durajaye, Xavier University Director of TRIO Student Support Services Dr. Daniel McSpadden, and Navigo President Tim Hanner. His organization is part of Covington-based Children, Inc. He's also the former superintendent of Kenton County Schools. So building upon what we were just talking about, we recently had an author on this program, and he wrote a book called The Millennial Money Makeover. And it talked a lot about how this generation, well, that generation now, because there's one now in college that's behind it. The millennial generation may have some struggles financially, having come of age professionally at the height of the recession, dealing with all this student loan debt. But one thing he said that really struck me was you shouldn't just go to college to study a field that you like, because you pile up debt and then you can't find an appropriate job to pay it off. He said to hold off on these creative dreams that you might have until all that debt is paid off. And that seems counter to everything that we millennials were told growing up. So where does that play in now in the current college success climate? Do creative students succeed academically, and then do they have the opportunity to succeed professionally?
You know, one of the challenges that we often deal with in higher education, certain aspects of higher education, so being creative, you know, it's viewed as that you're looking in some sort of degree that doesn't apply or doesn't relate to a job. And I push back on that narrative. The reason being, there's a lot of different aspects of a liberal education that apply to jobs. You know, one of the things we've been working on, and Tim could speak to this, employers are looking for individuals who can actually critically think. Mm-hmm. Critical thinking comes from a liberal arts education. You know, employees are looking for individuals who can communicate, both written and oral. And so those are ways as well that can benefit employers and can benefit our students. So I think we really have to think about the narrative. Are we saying that what you learn in college isn't useful? Or are we saying, how do we take the tools we've learned in college and apply them to the workforce? And so I wouldn't say that you should pile up debt aimlessly, but I think there are definitely tools that you can use from your college experience that naturally apply to any sort of job field. You know, almost anything you do, you're going to have to be able to write. You're going to have to be able to communicate. You know, any business owner is going to say, I want an individual who can think critically about a situation and come up with a solution, think innovatively, come up with new ideas. And so these are things that come from that college education. And I think we just have to reframe how we're looking at it and reframe the usefulness. And I think that it would challenge some of the narrative that says, you know, it's not worth it.
So in other words, you're saying somebody wants to major in theater, go ahead and major in theater, try to make it in theater. If it doesn't work out, you've got this four-year degree that has other benefits associated with it that should make you hireable.
So I would say, if you're majoring in theater, make sure that during the time you're majoring in theater, you're picking up the usable skills that can be translated to a number of different areas. If you're majoring in theater, make sure you focus on how to communicate orally, written communication. Make sure you're understanding critical thinking and however that plays in. Make sure you're thinking about innovation and how you can come up with new ideas. And I think those are things that can be in a theater degree, but we can't think solely, I majored in theater. If I don't find a job in theater, I'm therefore not going to be successful.
And Dr. Durajaye, you brought up a point about basically campus culture and the extracurricular experience of being on campus. And I'll let Dr. McSpadden get in on this one because you're at a pretty good-sized school as well. How important to the development of someone as an adult and as a contributing member of society is that period of time just on campus, not necessarily in the classroom, but seeing different types of people for the first time and thinking about different things? How important is that to their development?
I believe it's very important, and we strongly encourage students to be engaged in the campus culture. Stepping outside of the residence halls and stepping outside of the classroom and getting involved in student organizations, in extracurricular activities such as sports, intramural sports, things of that nature, theater, all of that, I think it helps to cultivate the student and make the whole student. You also are taking the opportunity to engage with other students that may not look like you, other students from various backgrounds. That goes along with our commitment to diversity and understanding others and understanding their differences. So I think that it's a value in students not just being in college and in the classroom, but being outside of the classroom and having that social engagement with other students on campus. And it provides ways for them to network with others, even with faculty, staff, and administrators and other employees that work on campus. And it allows them to engage and to experience various things that they may not have done before coming from, you know, You may have students that are from the inner city of Cincinnati, but then you may have students that, you know, come from Connecticut, and they are able to engage with one another and they're able to learn different things from each other. So I feel that it's very important to have those out of class experiences, joining those student organizations and participating, actively participating. And it helps to improve, as he mentioned, your communication skills and things of that nature. It helps you to engage with others, and it helps to improve on those skills that you're going to need when you graduate and go into the workforce, because you'll be engaging with various people from various backgrounds, and that is helpful in being engaged with other students on campus.
We don't have any representatives on the panel today from a community college system, but Tim, I know that your organization is working closely with the Gateway Community Technical Correct. College in Northern Kentucky. That institution was not around when I was an undergrad in the late 90s, early 2000s at NKU, and NKU served a community college role in a lot of ways with students who may not have been prepared for the rigorous coursework required at a place like NKU. Now Gateway's here, and it offers sort of that buffer. So either someone can go to Gateway and learn a specific trade and go right into the field, but there's also this relationship that these community colleges, whether it be Gateway, Cincinnati State, Ivy Tech, they're building with all of the other four-year universities so that you can go there for a couple of years and then head over. How important has that been?
It's been critical. Right before I came here, was on a conference call with Gateway and talking about creating healthcare pathways in the River Cities. And 2 weeks prior was over meeting with Health Innovation at NKU. So this is really about a seamless approach between our two-year technical and community colleges and four-year programs. And you said it very well, that it's not only about after the students leave high school, it's really backing that down into high school. Our best opportunity for students, and especially first-generation students, to be successful in college is to start integrating that work while they're in high school so that students get the confidence, understand the rigor. And that's happening through Thomas More, Xavier, Gateway, where you're seeing more and more colleges and universities engaging with high school students. But what we're trying to do is take that beyond gen ed classes so that students can, for example, next fall, take courses in dual credit that are logistics and supply chain, healthcare, and create those not just with a two-year college, but also with four-year institutions so that we have a 2+2 program and that students as early as eighth and ninth grade see that and they aspire to it and can start taking some of these courses as early as sophomore and junior year in high school. To me, that's a game changer, that confidence of the rigor that they know they can handle it.
I was fortunate to get the adjunct last semester at Ivy Tech in Indiana. I taught speech, and these were high school kids. So I was teaching these dually enrolled kids, and they were taking two classes at a time at the college. And so by the time they get out after two semesters of that, they've got about 12 college credit hours. But they still acted like high school students, so that part was a bit of
an adjustment. That's all part of learning.
Too prepared for that, but that was fun and is becoming increasingly important. One, it saves on the money. I mean, that's correct. Really the big sale in that one. You're learning, but you're not going to have to pay for those classes no matter where you end up going to school. So I found an article in U.S. News from 2009. So that's 10 years ago now. It noted that high school grades and achievement are the single best gauge for how well a student will do in college, no matter how tough or easy that high school was, more powerful as an indicator than even the SAT. Was that true then, and is that true now?
I think it's still consistent. You know, we've done research, and one thing I would emphasize, higher education has become much more data-informed. You know, right now we are doing things based on data that's available to us. So currently at NKU, we're looking at a number of different factors that we think contribute to positive retention, ultimately graduation. And so along with high school GPA or test scores is first semester GPA. You know, we have a lot of students who come from different high schools and they may do well at high school, but their first time actually at NKU and actually dealing with the rigor, as you talked about, that could be a different story. And so I think when you start looking at what are the factors that we think positively contribute that or what can we look at as strong indicators, that first semester GPA is going to really matter. Now, one thing Tim mentioned and I would like to echo, I think when we talk about partnerships and pathways, it's really important to recognize that we want to engage the students before they get here.
Right.
And so that's the whole purpose of our pathways, our partnerships. At NKU, we currently have dual enrollment at 27 high schools here in the region, over 1,400 students. And it's not because we want to just make sure that we're increasing, you know, our footprint. It's more so when our students are going to NKU, to Xavier, to other schools, they've already got that college credit, but they have a clear understanding of what to expect in college. They've got understanding. And so they don't have that apprehension we talked about. You know, you're a first-generation college student, but you have 12 credit hours. Well, that's a little bit different than if you're a first-generation college student and you don't have any. And so I think that we've got to make sure that we can continue to do things from an outreach standpoint. No more can higher education be insular that we think we only get the students once they get here. We've got to be part of the community, engage the community, and make sure that once they get here, this is just a continuation of what they've already been doing.
What about adult students and their unlikely path to success in college? What programs are in place for somebody who, say, 30, 40, 50, never went to college, has been out of school for a long time, but decided this is my time, I'm going to go back and do that? Mm-hmm. What do we do for them?
Well, I mean, we have an adult degree program, weekend degree program, where students can take classes at their pace and make sure that they're able to obtain that degree. I think that that's a very good program, a beneficial program for those students that need that or require that, to where they can take courses on the weekend and still be able to obtain that four-year degree. There's other services that are in place, just like for your traditional college students. They have their advisors. They have the professors that are there to work with them, to walk them through and help map out what they need to do as far as meeting the requirements of graduation. So I think that it's a very important program and a very good program for our adult students. And then you have a good number of students that will transfer from, like, Cincinnati State that are adults that will transfer into those programs, and they come over already with enough credit hours to help them to finish that four-year degree. So it's, I think it's a very good program.
I assume that's true for NKU.
We've made a significant investment in our adult students. We actually have our Adult Learners Programs of Service, which is an office that's solely dedicated for adult students. And so, you know, as Dr. Spadden mentioned, you know, we have specific programs that are for adult students. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that we do is we want to make sure that, you know, adult students are coming in with a number of life experiences. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure we can find a way to have them utilize those life experiences, not only in the class boot, but contributing to their education. So, for instance, we offer a lot of credit for prior learning. So let's say you've been working in a particular field. We find a way to equate that to course credit. We also offer credit by exam. You know, I'm an adult student. I've been working in a technical field. I actually understand this. Well, let me take a test and I can show this competency and I can get credit for it. And think about how much time you can shave off to agree, and from a cost standpoint. Mm-hmm. We actually engaged in a recent really big initiative at NKU. We're partnering with a company that has an apprenticeship program, and we are going to let the students that are in their apprenticeship program come to NKU with 18 credit hours already towards their degree. And so you think about that, and you think about access. And so that would be an example of something we're doing where we want to engage our adult students, because oftentimes the focus for college is traditional age students, but adult students have such a rich amount of knowledge and experience that enriches the classroom. We've got to make sure we're serving them as well. So I think that we've got to continue to think about creative ways to engage that population. You know, here in the region, there's a large amount of adult age students who don't have a degree or a credential, and we've got to go out and target and find them and bring them back to higher education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to speak to that a little bit too. The momentum you mentioned earlier, Michael, about the River City Project going on with Gateway and high schools in the River Cities, that really extends beyond the high schools, to echo what we just heard. That the exciting part, we're talking about creating training hubs around healthcare that involve NKU and Gateway, or the College of Informatics at NKU working with Gateway on an IT cybersecurity hub. That is not just created for high school students. Working with Dr. Figueroa, we've talked about...
He's the president at Gateway.
I'm sorry, yes. President at Gateway and Terry Von Hondorf and that, their staff. We're working together so that folks in the community, whether it's in the day or during the evening, that you have classes available. I'm calling them 7-Eleven hubs, for lack of a better term right now, from morning till late at night, that folks who are working during the day and can come back, and it's closer to home. And then you matriculate to NKU or Thomas More or Xavier. That's exciting. And that's the way we have to think about it. We have to bring the training to where people are.
You know, one thing to echo what Tim said, and I think we also have to think about multiple mechanisms for getting the education there. You know, we put a significant investment in our online courses because, again, we've got adult students who may have, you know, difficult schedules. Maybe I can't come on the weekend. Maybe I can't come in the evening. And so if we can find a way that they can access higher education on their own terms or a way that's beneficial for them, I think that's really important. And so that's another aspect of it, making sure it's flexible and it works with them.
Well, thanks to all of you for this very important conversation. My guests today have been Northern Kentucky University Vice Provost Dr. Andy Durajaye, Xavier University Director of TRIO Student Support Services Dr. Daniel McSpadden, and Navigo President Tim Hanner. Appreciate all of your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our show are online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.